Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Racer X podcast show. I'm your host, Steve Mathis. And this show is brought to you by Troy Lee Designs. Well, actually, they're not really a sponsor, but my guest wanted it to be. So TLD for the title, sponsorship this week only. After all, who am I to argue with the man that is right now, as we speak, the front runner for the prestigious Feld Entertainment Supercross Team Manager of the Year? It's a pretty big deal, really. And he's after it. I know that for sure. He may not say in this interview, but I know it's right on his mind. My guest, David Pingree. He's managed to manage himself right into the new gig as team manager for Troy Lee Designs Honda team. The team with the coolest looking bikes, at least the coolest looking Hondas probably. In the I think the coolest looking bike this year is Reedy Suzuki's, man. I really like those. I think the Cali guys have lost their top spot this year. But anyways, team manager for the Troy Lee Designs Honda team. Think about this. You're a new team manager. Your first job and most important job is to hire the riders. So Ping goes out, gets the new job, has to go out and get some riders. He secures Jake Moss, Jimmy Albertson, both pretty good riders. Both guys have a bright future. And then both guys go out and crap the bed, and they get hurt and miss the start of the season. Pretty much the worst thing that could happen to you if you were a team manager. So being the little magician that he is, though, Ping reached up, found a guy that was installing fire pipes for a living, and you'll get more and hear more about these fire pipes later on. And that guy was Chris Blose. So as of this recording, Chris is in fifth in the points, and he's doing a great job. And Ping pretty much looks like a genius for selecting Chris right out of the fire pipe install business. So his other guys are Sean Borkenhagen and Steve Boniface in the 450 class, and they're both doing pretty good too. As a matter of fact, at A1, he had all three riders in a main event, and I don't know, man. I don't think too many people would have bet on that if you had asked beforehand for some odds on that. As we all know, Ping's had a pretty good little racing career. He even finished second in the points one year, which we've all heard about many, many times. I was teammates twice with Ping, first on FMF Honda and then on a Red Bull KTM team. And on one team he remembers me, on the other one he doesn't, so it's a wash. I guess the point is that all the things you laugh about in his online columns is the way he acts in real life. I know because, like I said, I was on his teams. He's a very funny guy, and I can't believe this is the first time I've had him on this show. I mean, I don't know what's taking me so long. I want to try to have him on more often for sure. Maybe I'll just randomly call him here and there. I think that might be a funny little segment. But anyways, here it is. He's on the show, and listen in as we talk about his new job, his career, racing career, and a bunch of other random stuff that seemed really funny at the time to talk about. So just two guys really shooting the breeze, as they say. You can definitely figure that out when you're listening to this. And remember, you can listen to the old podcast shows from RacerX Canada on iTunes as well as on RacerXCanada.com. These should be available on iTunes at some point. Jason Hooper is screwing me out of that. I'm not really sure what he's doing, but if you just want to listen to the archives for these shows, they're at the bottom at racerxonline.com. If you want to be a sponsor of this thing, just email me at mathis@racerxonline.com, and we'll figure something out. But anyways, enough shilling. Thanks for listening, and here he is, the man, the myth, the legend, David Pingree. David Pingree, you are on the Racer X podcast show. We don't have a sponsor, or I don't have a sponsor. Do you want a sponsor?
Let's just say it's sponsored by Troy Lee, since I'm at work doing this.
Yeah, we can. Okay. Welcome to the Racer X podcast show, sponsored by Troy Lee Designs. I'm presenting Troy Lee Designs team manager, David Pingree. How's that?
Perfect.
All right. What's going on?
Just, happy with the way things are going here with the Troy Lee team. Chris Blose is obviously, as you've seen, been kicking butt. So that's making everyone smile around here. And even our other two guys, you know, have shown speed at Anaheim. They both did great. And so, yeah, for a team that's comprised of all fill-in guys, we're doing good.
What's going on with Blose? Like, you are right now, you are the front runner for team manager of the year. I know it's early, but...
Woo!
But I know.
Such an honor.
I know. Live Nation basically runs out of guys, but you might
have my name mentioned in the same breath as Mike Fisher.
Yes. What's the deal with Blose? I mean, you know, obviously, he would have been snatched up by, I don't want to say a better team, but let's say a factory supported team if people known he was going to be this good.
Well, You know, it's like we found a diamond in the rough, you know. Mm-hmm. He was overlooked last year. He had a couple of top tens. He had a couple of top ten finishes in the Nationals in the 450 class. And when our guys got hurt, Jake Moss anyway, we were looking, you know, we scouring results and, you know, looking for either rookie kids who may come in and just shine or, you know, maybe somebody that was overlooked, and Chris was one of those guys. Looking at his results, he was, you know, an obvious choice to invite to our tryout. And at the tryout, I was, you know, I've known him forever because growing up in Arizona, you know, he and his older brother Michael, they've been around forever, you know. And so I knew of him. I didn't even really see him race last year, but we saw his results and we thought, all right, well, let's give him a try. And when he came out, he told me he'd been doing construction since the Nationals ended to make money. You know, he's been working in, you know, big warehouses and things, putting up fire sprinkler risers and whatever, like just working for a living, you know. And I'm like, so you haven't even really been riding? He's like, no, I mean, you know, not too much. So the two things that really impressed me were, one, how solid he was. This guy is, like, built like a brick shithouse. Can I say that?
Yeah. Yeah, you can say that.
Yeah.
Reedy even used the F word one time.
I think I told you, he'd put a Chris Blos-sized hole in a brick shithouse if he ran through it. I mean, he's, like, solid. So, you know, I thought, man, if he, you know, in the first turns and that type of thing, like, that's good. You know, he's solid. He's not going to go down. And then
like rollerball.
I'm not going to reference any Canadian riders in this interview, but anyway. In the whoops, he was just killing it. He was going through them. You know, Lawrence was out there the day we were doing our tryout at Competitive Edge, and he was going through them faster than Lawrence, and they were big. I was like, man, I mean, you know, he's solid. He, you know, obviously he looks good on the bike, and he's good in the whoops. I mean, those are like, whoops are a big part of Supercross usually. And so anyway, you know, we gave him a chance on the bike, and right away he just started looking better and better, and his fitness seemed like it was going to be the issue. So, you know, I built him a riding program and got him plugged in with my trainer, Charles Dow, out here. And he started making huge strides right away. And, I mean, by the middle of December, he was doing 20 laps and looking great. And I'm thinking, man, he's going faster than Kennard and Reardon and all the Factory Connection guys at the test track. He can do 20 laps. I'm like, we really have a legit guy here.
You're like, holy crap.
Well, I mean, you know, it was a bit of a surprise. I was as surprised as everybody at first, you know.
And yeah, then, I thought you got his name wrong, and you actually got Michael Blos when I heard that. I was like, oh, you know, Ping just screwed his name up.
Yeah, but you know what? He actually follows with the younger brother thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've talked about how like younger brothers always are a little more successful than their older brothers. Bradshaw, you know, did better than his older brother Zach. Emick did better than his older brother Brian. Ivan Tedesco did better than his older brother Gio. Like, for whatever reason, the younger brothers seem to excel, and this is the same kind of case where Michael was a good rider, but Chris seems to have that little bit extra drive or whatever it is, and he's taking advantage of it. I think he's gonna, you know, make a name and a career for himself here this year.
I mean, let's face it: when you go looking for a rider, there's 20 Chris Blos. How many people did you invite to the tryout, and how did that all take place? Like. And what about Billy Lilinovich? Did you invite him?
We talked to Billy. Yeah, we definitely considered him. But, you know, the one thing about Chris was he'd gotten a couple of top 10 results on, how do I put this politically correctly?
Nobody listens to this.
Crappy team.
Yeah, okay.
So we knew if we had him on better equipment, he could only be better. You know, if he's getting an eighth on a Roach, then,
right.
You know, theoretically he should be able to get a fifth on better equipment and with a better team around him. So, you know, Billy, he just straight up admitted to me, he's like, dude, I'm not in shape. I was like, there's just no way. You know, he goes, maybe East Coast. You guys doing East Coast? I'm like, no. He goes, well, crap, you know, I don't know. He goes, I haven't even been riding. So he was out. We considered Hamlin I don't know. Like I said, I like what I saw out of Chris, and we felt like he was someone who was one of those guys where he would take advantage of the opportunity, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He would appreciate it and put everything he had into it because he'll know it's his maybe one and only shot to make it in. And that's exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, he's taking advantage of it. He's doing great. I mean, Yeah, there's nothing more you can say. There's no way that anybody would have saw that for sure, except for maybe you. But
maybe Mitch Payton, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The only guy who's doing better than your guy is Mitch's guy, so he wouldn't have room for him, I guess. But
yeah, I suppose.
Now, Borkenhagen's not bad. Never ridden Supercross before, right?
Nope. In fact, when he came to our test, he'd only ridden a Supercross track like 5 times. And I kind of got him in the test just based on the fact that I liked him. I thought he's such a nice kid. And he's got a really cool style. It's fun to watch him ride. It's kind of like, I don't know, a little bit of David Bailey, a little bit of like Damon Huffman. I don't know, he's kind of lanky and long. And anyway, he looks good at the test. He was probably the second quickest guy behind Chris. And but everybody just liked him. So, you know, we made the decision to go with Chris, and then, you know, we kind of kicked it around like, man, how could we do something for Sean? You know, we all just really liked him. We were kind of going, well, Chris is the obvious choice, but, like, we all kind of wanted to pick Sean for some reason just because we liked him so much. So we worked out something with him where he kind of, you know, he brought some stuff to the team, and we made it happen. And, yeah, Anaheim, he went out, got a 12th in his very first race, which is better than I did. I didn't make my first main event, you know, that I tried for. So, and he had some things go his way for sure, and it was definitely a wake-up call in Phoenix when he didn't get good starts, didn't, you know, do some jumps that he should have done. And, you know, so hopefully he continues to learn and improve. I could see him, honestly, by the end of the season, putting in a ride like P.J. Larson did this weekend.
Right, right.
You know, top ten ride like that.
And look at Larson. He didn't even qualify at the opening round. So
right.
Goes to show you that class, which you know all too well, that class, anything can happen.
You know, there's a theory. I'm not going to say who said this, but another team manager, he said the best way to spot talent is to watch who the girls go to.
Oh.
You know, like, because a lot of times, like, these little hussies that run around the pits, they want in a factory truck worse than some of the riders. So you see which riders they go, they were with this guy, but then they left him, and now they're with this kid. They got to see potential, income potential. See?
Right.
So you watch what the little hookers do running around the pits, and then you pick that guy. Wherever they're going, you go.
I never thought of that.
I don't know. It's something to think about.
These are things that get discussed in that team manager tower during the race.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Over Mike Fisher's coffee breath.
Have you ever seen a human being drink more coffee than Mike Fisher? I guess you don't hang out that much with him, but trust me.
No.
Trust me. Nobody drinks more coffee than Mike Fisher. And sometimes he acts like it, too.
Well.
Let's talk about how you got a job as a team manager.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah. Like, how did that all go down? Obviously, you've known Troy forever. But did you ever think you'd be a team manager?
I kind of considered it, but I wasn't crazy about the idea because of the travel. It's one of the things that really burned me out on racing full-time was just flying every weekend. And now that I've got a couple kids, I don't want to leave more. You know, I want to stay home more. So, but it just kind of, you know, I've known Troy since 95. He started painting my helmets. So I've been buddies with him for a long time and obviously raced for the Supermoto team for the last couple of years. And I knew kind of from just be hanging out at the shop here that they were looking for someone to manage the team and they needed to do something different. And about that time, Racer X was really going over their budget and their financial health, and they cut a lot of stuff back, you know. And some of that had to do with me, and my position was kind of cut back to a more limited basis, and I needed something else.
Thankfully, they saved Electronic Ping, thankfully.
Thankfully. So, you know, I mentioned it to Troy, and he goes, man, you know, that might be a good fit, and everything just kind of fell into place. So, and it's perfect for me because we're just doing West Coast Supercross and Supermoto, so I only got to fly like 4 times this year,
right.
You know.
Right.
So I like that, and I love everyone here at TLD, And I've actually been having a lot of fun with it.
What's been the one thing that maybe you didn't think about and now you're doing something all the time? What's been an unexpected aspect of that job?
Well, the thing that sucks is sponsor, taking care of the sponsors. Oh, it sounds bad. Like
that sounds really bad.
Well, they just, you know, dealing with their contracts, making sure they're paying, you know, making, you know, just, oh, hey, I need a couple tickets. Can I get some jerseys? I need pictures. Can I get this?
Passes. Yeah.
You know?
These are things you never had to worry about when you sauntered into A1 as one of the favorites that night. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Well,
here's
like
something.
Here's something I
always notice. I went through a lot of teams in my mechanicking career, and I have always contended that riders don't make that good a team managers. No offense, because they have everything looked after for them most of the time, and Larry Brooks is an example of somebody who was a great team manager, though, but I attributed that because he's a privateer. He probably was scraping for every dollar he could all the time, you know. But a guy like you, let's face it, you had really good rides your whole career. And you know, a guy like you, I would think, in my little world, in my little theory, might struggle as a manager because you're like, what? What do you mean? Who books these tickets? I have to book the tickets? What airline do I call? How do I – you know what I mean?
But, yeah, but – you gotta. You're putting that in the context of today's racers, you know, where they have a little, you know, flocking of people around them that make them sandwiches and rub their shoulders and here's your sports drink.
I had a couple of bad managers even back in the like mid '90s or late '90s that were riders, so kind of went off that theory, but.
Well.
But anyway, so
I think you need to look a little deeper there because I'm good at everything I do, man.
Yeah. Well, clearly, look at Chris Bellows.
Yeah. See, I mean.
I mean, you're
right away success.
Right now, you're the front runner for Team Manager of the Year. So,
oh.
But anyway, so what? So dealing with the sponsors has been something that you didn't really think would take that much time up, and it's taken a lot of your time.
I just thought it would be cut and dry. Here, you guys want to help? Cool.
Yeah. Right.
Contract signed. Put it in a file and forget about it.
Yeah.
Checks come in, no problem every month, and you know.
Yeah, it's not like that.
All sunshine and daisies, but it's just not that way. It's a little more of a struggle, especially in this, you know...
economy.
Economic climate.
Time for a change. No. What was this saying?
Hope.
Are
we talking about the Obama
slogan? Yeah. I forget. I'm kidding.
Yes, we can.
I forgot.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go on there with you right now.
Hey, I'll do it if you want.
No,
talk about it.
I don't know enough.
About shutting down Guantanamo Bay. What are they going to do with those guys?
I don't know.
Talk about it?
No. I don't know enough about it to have educated a conversation.
Because I'll fight with you.
Well, I already
irritated Simon Cubby. He won't even talk to me anymore.
Because of that Event National Day?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. our little gay discussion.
Yeah.
Homosexuality and whatnot.
Yeah. We're not going to get into that on my podcast.
Okay, let's
show.
Leave it alone.
How about that Vet National story? Did you get much feedback from that?
Everything I heard was that people loved what I did, but just they hated your stuff.
Yeah, that's funny. I got the other thing, too. I got the, like, my mom and my wife thought my stuff was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, go figure, huh? So, just West Coast only and West Coast Supercross, no Nationals. What is going on with Supermoto right now? What's the latest deal with Supermoto Series?
Oh, man, it's just, you know, it's low man on the totem pole, really.
Yeah.
That and, you know, dirt track. And so, you know, obviously with money being so scarce, it's struggling to stay alive. And a lot of the teams are pulling out, cutting back, you know. I mean, there was a lot of money being spent on a sport that was really young, you know.
Right.
Bottom line, you can't have a sport that's 5 years old and have, you know, five different teams with semis there. I mean, that didn't happen with motocross. Why would it happen with supermoto, you know? So it kind of needed to get restructured and anyway, you know, kind of start over. Got a little too big for its britches too fast. And
is it going to happen?
I hope so.
Really? It's still up in the air,
they got
huh?
a tentative schedule already put together. And
yeah.
Are
you going to race?
I would do some of them. I'm not going to do the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely want to do X Games, and there, you know, Mammoth Mountain has already committed to doing the season finale for sure.
Oh, cool!
They want to do it up at the very top of the mountain, you know, right at the resort.
I've never been there, but it sounds high.
It is high.
Is the Flying Freckle coming back?
He'd probably do X Games. He'd do a couple.
What's it like being a? I want to talk about Supercross right now, but what's it like being teammates with Wardy?
With Wardy, yeah. You know, it's funny. Last weekend in Phoenix, I drove by Sun Devil Stadium, and I was laughing. I was like, "Man, that's the first Supercross I went to in 1985."
Oh yeah.
And Wardy won it. I'm pretty sure Wardy won it. And I've got a little. I had a broken arm at the time. I was 10 years old. And Wardy, Lachine, and Bader Monet all signed it.
Nice.
Still got it at my house. It's all nasty and funky. Yeah. But, so yeah, it's just funny, like, you know, thinking back to last summer, just, you know, even still Wardy and I will go out riding sometimes, but just going, dude, this guy has been around forever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's cool.
And he's not one of those guys, because I talked to you about this before, he's not one of those guys that's like, oh, we were better back in the day. And, like, he doesn't really have a big ego, right?
No. He's just... Not at all.
Yeah.
He's funny, man. I actually loved when he was... when I was riding the 250 in 07 and he was riding the 450, we had so much fun, man. One time, it was this race, it was really cold. I think it was at Salt Lake or something. And he and I are up in the lounge, and we're both getting dressed. And it's like, you know, gear's all cold, it's leather, you know, it's kind of a struggle to get into, and bending over and buckling boots, and we're like, we just sound like a couple of 80-year-old men, you know, like by the time we both got packed into this gear, we're sweating, out of breath, and he looks at me, he's all, dude, I'm exhausted already. He goes, we sound like a couple of grumpy old men in here. So he's fun to have around, man. I love Wardy.
Does he want to work with the Supercross team at all? Like, I mean, is that ever, do you ever bring him by? Do you,
like, you know what? It's like you say, where he doesn't ever want to kind of be like, well, you know, I'm, you know, 7-time national champion, blah, blah, blah. He just, I think he kind of feels like it's changed a lot since he was doing it. So I don't know that he's really comfortable with, like, the specifics of, you know, there was no scrub back when he raced. You know what I mean? It was like, there's just a lot that's changed. And I think at some point you kind of get to where the fundamentals are the same, you know, as far as training and focus and, like, you know, commitment and that type of thing. But even some of that's gotten real specialized, you know, and since he was doing it. So I think, you know, he's always said he's there to help, anything he can do, whatever. But I think he doesn't feel as comfortable as, you know, like Jeremy. He's going to come out and work with our guys this Wednesday a little bit. And, you know, obviously Jeremy's he's still pretty comfortable that he can offer up some Supercross advice that's pertinent and the guys will listen to, you know.
Well, that's cool. That's another perk of being a TLD team. If you're a rider, you're like, hey, there's all these great champions and legends hanging out. Like, MC probably is just doing it just as a favor to you and Troy. Just like, yeah.
Well, he wears Troy's helmet now, so,
yeah.
You know, he's not wearing a Jeremy McGrath replica helmet.
And, he's not wearing a Bell helmet anymore?
Part of that deal was, you know, hey, you know, help work with our Supercross guys a little bit if you can, and Jeremy's like, yeah, no problem.
Right. MC is probably one of the coolest dudes out there still, so... Yeah, I find it's funny talking about Wardy because I email the dogger back and forth, you know, a couple times a week. And oftentimes I'm like, I can't believe I'm emailing the dogger. It's just the wrong machine, you know? And he's funny. He's a funny guy.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'd want him teaching my guys how to be a professional racer. But anyways.
But he's good for a little conversation.
Oh, he's really, yeah, he's classic. He's comedy.
Did he ever tell you about the race he did in Europe where there was a bell hanging over the finish line?
No.
He got $100 for every time he could reach up and smack the bell with his hand.
No, I never heard that one.
I asked him about that one.
Yeah, I did hear about the time he tackled the trophy girl at Oklahoma City, I think, or maybe Tampa. He tackled her. He ran her, chased her down in front of everybody, sprayed her with champagne, and tackled her. He said full, like, Lawrence Taylor, full stretched out, tackled her. And she got really mad at him, but he thought it was great. That's another thing. You don't ever... The riders now aren't really into the trophy girls, you know? They're all married, and I don't know. Just don't really hear about that stuff
Well, anymore. It's different now. Everybody's married now.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're in the 450 class, look, who's not married or engaged?
Josh Grant. And he just got in the class, yeah.
Everyone else, married, engaged, babies, whatever.
Right.
Back in the day, it was like RJ was just slaying chicks.
Yeah.
Doggers tackling him.
Another story that Lachine had was when he won San Diego in 83 and he was 16. And he said on Monday morning at school, they announced, hey, everybody, Ron Lachine, our own student here, won the San Diego Supercross. And he just rubbed his hands together. He said, and was like, this is going to be a good week. Hey, so have you had to come down on a rider? Have you had to lay it on?
Nah. Not really.
No?
I mean,
I can't wait for that story.
Oh, yeah. I'm waiting for it to happen with Chris.
Yeah.
You know, he's dating Miss Supercross. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So, like, Mitch just thinks that's hilarious. He goes, oh, man, you just wait. So, you know, and to his credit, like, he'll stay out here and do what we say. If we're like, man, you need to be riding, you know, this day, he stays and he does it. But then as soon as he's done, he gets in his little lowered Chevy truck and he bumps that thing all the way back to Phoenix so he can spend time with her.
Wow. Yeah.
But I'm like, hey, dude, all right, you got the weekend off and then get your butt back here. You know, we're back to work on Monday. And he's back out. So.
Right.
He's putting in the miles and the time and everything else.
So I imagine he's not really making any money, like salary, right?
You could be pretty correct in saying that.
Yeah, so he's on Honda contingency and the awesome purse money. So for him, I mean, it's all incentive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's got nothing to sit back on and wait for. So what's it like in that tower in the race? Describe the working conditions in there with all the team managers. You got Roger.
It's crowded. Who's this? I mean, every team should be able to have some guy up there, because you can see the lap times, you can see the whole track. You know, the mechanics can't see anything from where they're at. So it is good to be able to have kind of that bird's eye view and be able to spot things and, you know, relay them back to the mechanics so they can write things on the pit board. And but, like, some of the teams will have two or three guys up there. Like,
yeah.
Who's this guy Dudley that works for L&M?
No. Dudley is the motor guy for L&M.
Well, he doesn't belong out there.
No, you're right.
You know, he's just one example, because he, like, you know, he comes up every time, but, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's crowded. It gets a little crowded, and it's getting ridiculous. So,
that's,
you know.
That's been a constant problem for a long time. And before there was a tower, it was the first turn. How many people are in the first turn? And, you know, for a lights main event, you know, the team managers would walk out there and they'd be like, hey, no, you know, you're not a team manager. Mitch Payton is. And then whoever, say Bruce Sternstrom, would be like, well, that's a Kawasaki and I'm a team manager. And, you know, so they go, okay. And so that's been a constant problem. I don't really know. And it seems like the bigger team you are, the more passes you get for, you know.
Yeah.
Like, good luck if you're Moto XXX getting another team manager credential. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Be well. Like,
who are you again?
It's that's just the way it goes, I guess. But there should be, one representative from each team up there. That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Even,
at one time they tried to do one manufacturer. So,
yeah, but that's not necessarily fair, because, like, let's say Honda sends JC Waterhouse.
Mm-hmm.
You think he gives two squirts of piss what our guys are doing?
Maybe he just wants to poach your riders. But,
well, you know. I'm just telling you.
Right.
You know, he's watching his guys. He's not watching mine. So, I don't know. I realize it's hard. I'm not blaming anybody at Live Nation or Failed or whatever. It's just the way it is.
Do you work with the riders much on technique as far as actual riding?
Yeah, a little bit. You know,
bring your plaques down. You just have the plaques fall out of your pocket. Oh, sorry. Here's Anaheim. Oh, sorry.
Well, it's like we talked about at Anaheim. Like, I just go, well, guys, I know you are looking at this section and thinking maybe you're going to do it this way, but let me tell you how I did it when I won Anaheim.
Right, right.
The second time.
Exactly.
No, but really, Chris, you know, it's little things with him. He has a tendency to seat bounce things a little too much, which is sort of a trend of a lot of younger kids.
Mm-hmm.
They seat bounce when they don't even really have to. Like,
right.
At Phoenix, he was seat bouncing the second triple. And I'm like, dude, that's... you're losing time, you know.
Yeah.
Stand up and suck that, you know, scope that thing up and,
yeah,
you know, push forward. Like, so I'll kind of spot little things, or if he's taking it too easy. Oh, speaking of Wardy, he just walked in here.
The flying freckle.
Yeah, but I'll kind of, it's just little things with Chris.
Mm-hmm.
He goes into the whoops faster than I ever went through him, so I keep quiet about that. But, like, there are little subtle things that I'll help him with, and he listens, you know. If I say, hey, man, you're losing time here, and this is why, this is what you're doing, here's what you need to do, he does it. With Borkenhagen, he's got a lot to learn, you know, and he listens really well, too. I mean, we're working on, the biggest thing with him is just building confidence, and it's hard. you know, for a kid who just, oh, man, it's just really hard.
Yeah. I mean,
that is something they've got to do on their own, and it comes with time, and there's nothing you can say. Hey, be more confident. Believe in yourself. You know, yeah. Like, well, what are you going to do?
What you should do is say, hey, Chris, we need your chick to date Borka Hagen for a little while. So he gets
Chris,
more
I need
confidence.
To borrow your girlfriend. Just give me a couple weeks.
Yeah. Borkenhagen, walk around with her in the pits right now. Walk around. What are some of the managers that you had in your career that you maybe borrow a little bit from in your style of managing? Is there anybody like that? I can't see you being like Mitch, so I don't know if you should really say Mitch.
Well, it's funny because Mitch has changed a lot.
Oh, he has. I know. No.
He's not anything like he used to be. When I was there, actually at Anaheim too, I was over there. Anaheim one, not
Anaheim,
Anaheim
two.
Two.
What?
Anaheim
huh?
Also. I was over in his pits talking to him, and Mike Hooker was there. I don't know if you remember Mike Hooker, but
yes, I do.
He managed the team for two of the years when I was there, and he works for TRD now, but he was, like, super mellow, never got excited or anything, and Mitch was in the corner screaming, you know,
right.
Hooker would just be like, well, you know, what are you going to do? So, you know, I tried to land somewhere in the middle.
Uh-huh.
And for me, I kind of try to do it my own way, too, like, I think a lot of the team managers, maybe Bobby Moore was the exception. When I rode for FMF Honda, he could come out and on an outdoor track, he'd go faster than all of us. He'd just straight smoke us.
I was on that team.
Yeah, oh yeah, you remember. So it's like...
You still don't remember me.
No, I don't remember from that year, I'm not going to lie. But, so I feel
we
like
had,
I definitely
we had
have
conversations.
Something.
We had actual conversations that year.
I don't remember it.
Okay.
But I try to, you know... apply that you know, I mean, I can go out and ride with these guys on an outdoor track. I don't ride supercross much anymore, but like I'll go out and ride with them wherever, and just, you know, I can ride right with them. So I think they have a certain amount of respect for me because they're like, well, shoot, this guy, you know, he actually does know what he's doing, he's been through it. So a lot of team managers can't have that. Like when Mitch would tell me, you need to jump that triple, Damon Huffman's doing it, you need to jump it, you have to do it. You know, and you just want to go, screw you, dude. You aren't, you know, you
yeah.
wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, don't tell me what, you know.
Right.
But if I tell Chris, hey, man, look, you know, you can do that. There's five guys doing it already, you know, like, you know, he at least, you know, I'll explain how they're doing it and whatever, and he gets it. And, like, I think that they have a little more respect. I've got some credibility, like, kind of built in, I guess,
right.
is what I'm trying to say. So. I try to go out and work with the guys as much as I can and just rather than just sit here and at my desk and
right yell and scream
take care of paperwork, I try to actually get a little more hands on with them
right.
While I've got something to offer, you know.
Is there any other managers that you had that you respected or that you took something from, or what'd you take from Salvaro?
Well, I respected all of them, Steve.
Like, what'd you take from Salvaraj, for example, when we were at KTM?
Salvaraj was a very organized individual.
Yes, he
and
was.
And I didn't take anything from him because I am a disaster. You should see all the papers on my
he
desk.
He had a lot of Palm Pilots and a lot of computers.
And he liked to say victory. And I sometimes I'll just use that. Guys, you know,
and
I'm very, very proud of you. That's what I'll say.
And if they look at you funny, you know they're listening. You know that they're actually listening. If they just don't say anything, you're like, listen, I'm obviously not making an impact because I just said the word victory and nothing happened.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Like, anyone?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. Peyton. Billy Whitley.
Give me. Well, sorry to interrupt you. What was your? Yeah. Give me your best a Peyton story about freaking out.
Best Peyton story.
On you or on anybody that you saw?
I saw him rip into James Dobb quite a bit. He's got a spot-on James Dobb impression.
Yeah.
No, I mean, he screamed at me quite a bit. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
But I deserve it. You know, in 95, he yelled at me all the time, and I deserved it.
Uh-huh.
Probably the biggest one, he wasn't even there, but it was 97 in Daytona. And, you know, that's when they had Gainesville, the national opener was the
right.
week before. And I got landed on by Steve Lampson and broke my pinky finger. Broke it pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still crooked. It looks like a fish hook. Anyway.
Every day you're like, hey, thanks, Lammy.
So I was staying at Carmichael's at the time, and I was, like, spending a month down there or whatever during those rounds. And
mm-hmm.
And the next, you know, after I broke it at Gainesville, I like didn't even ride. I tried riding once that week, and it just hurt bad. I couldn't ride. I was kind of a wussy. I don't know what my deal was. So we get to Daytona, and I'm just like, man, it hurts too bad. I'm not going to race. And Hooker's down there, and he's like, come on, you got to be kidding me. So he calls Mitch, puts me on the phone with him, and Mitch is like, Ping, it's your pinky finger. Are you serious? You're not even going to go try? I'm like, well, fine, I'll go try, but I'm just telling you it hurts. I mean, I can't ride. So, of course, I pull the whole shot in the main and led for 13 of the 15 laps. And, you know, that was back when it was daytime. It was freaking 100 degrees.
And gnarly and rough.
13, and the lap times were so long that 13 laps was, like, over 20 minutes. So I was barely fit for 15 minutes, you know. Like, I was throwing anchor mm-hmm. a little bit. So at about the, you know, two laps to go, here comes your boy Ferry and John Dowd. And they both ended up getting by me, and I got third. But, like, Peyton was just laughing at me after that. He's like, dude, you weren't even going to ride. You almost freaking won Daytona.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I heard he went off on Casey Johnson quite a bit, too. I heard some of those stories from RC himself, I think, told me that.
Yeah, I don't know why. He liked to rip on Casey pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, Casey was so stubborn that even if he was wrong, he'd still argue his point. So he and Mitch butted heads pretty good.
Billy Whitley was another manager that you liked? Primal
Suzuki
days?
Yeah, Billy Whitley was good.
Yeah.
Ron Heben, you know, he was my manager at KTM. Were you there still then?
No, I left right when Heben took charge the week before Steel City when Langston's wheel blew up and KTM lost the title.
All right.
But when I was there the year with you, we had Selvarage and
Selvarage. Well, Heben took over the next year and he was great.
Slicer's good for a good story time.
Plano Honda, Scott Sheik was my team manager. I actually probably had more fun that summer than any other time, just because, you know, Sheik, he was fun to
yeah.
hang out with. So anyway, they were all good. You know,
I
took a little bit of something from all of them.
I'm sure Peyton right now just looks at you all dressed all nicely as a team manager and just shakes his head and laughs. I have no doubt about that.
He just thinks it's great because he knows, you know, it's funny what you see now out of the riders, and Mitch just goes, yeah, you remember when you told me that exact same thing that they're saying to you, or you did that exact same thing to me, and I'm just like, yeah, gosh.
What, do you get involved much with the technical aspect of the bikes?
No. I mean, you know, I'll go out and watch it. I can definitely see if something isn't working right, you know. I mean, I know how a bike should look and feel, and if I can see it doing something, I definitely speak up, and I've got a really good relationship with Bones and Mitch over there at Pro Circuit, so I can just call Bones and be like, hey, man, you know, it's rebounding too fast. We went all the way in, and, you know, whatever. He'll come out and or build us a different setting. And but really, Matt Jory, the guys back here in the shop are awesome. They're on top of that, so, I mean, I don't really have to worry about it too much.
Right. When are your guys getting back? Are they going to make the series at all?
Well,
Vegas.
It's pretty gnarly, actually. We got a meeting today to go over it because Jake Moss is here now.
Oh, is he? Okay.
He took a bike yesterday to start riding. So, and he's a nut. He's been off for 3 months, and he's like, "Well, I'd like to get a bike today and maybe race this weekend." Race this weekend, dude! You've been laying on your back for 3 months. So I told him to ride outdoors for a week or so, and then we'll, you know. In a little bit here, we'll get him out on the test track and see how he looks. But we're not sending him out until he can do 15 laps at speed, you know.
And, yeah.
Jimmy Albertson gets his cast off in about a week and a half. He's, you know, it's going to be day to day. He says maybe San Diego, but more than likely, here's what's going to happen: is we're going to end up going to Seattle and Salt Lake City
with four guys.
Well, five guys if Boniface stays on, you know. So, yeah, but four guys in the lights class, and we're going to be strapped for mechanics, parts, you know.
Yeah.
It's going to be gnarly, but.
I'll step up. I'll grab the wrenches.
We might need you to.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Get back in there.
But we, you know, we made a commitment to Jake. It was kind of a weird deal because he signed his contract and sent it back to us, faxed it to us. Literally the day we got it, he went out and broke his back.
Yeah.
So we hadn't even countersigned it, but. You know, we were just like, man, we're not going to do him like that. You know,
yeah.
Let's honor it. And But it's definitely made it interesting. And, you know, again, with Jimmy, he was riding so well, too. He would have been in the top 10 for sure in that mix. You know, he's riding great.
He was getting pretty adapted, too, because he didn't race Supercross last year.
Yeah, I did.
He did?
Yeah. He rode East Coast and did some rounds.
He did? Oops.
And he did okay. You know, he didn't set the world on fire, but, his equipment wasn't great either. Right. So,
I feel for the kid because he got that factory Honda ride and then hurt himself.
Yeah, and he's still, you know, I'm telling you, if we could just find, if there's anyone out there listening who wants to sponsor a race team.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get a sponsor for the podcast.
This team would love to go race the whole Supercross series and the Nationals and Supermoto, you know, but.
So, like, if Bill Gates is out there listening right now.
Man, we just, it just all comes down to, you know, what makes sense financially.
And how much input does Troy Lee have day to day?
Well, at the end of the day, everything, you know, I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, does he, every day, does he check on, does he
know what's going on? No. Obviously, the design is all him.
Yeah.
And then, but as far as day-to-day operations, you know, sometimes I'll go 3 or 4 days, I don't even see Troy.
Oh, okay, all right.
He's like, you know, buzzes around here, you might see him, oh, I think I saw him walk by over there for a minute, and then you can't find him.
Yeah.
He's just gone, so.
What's it like just working at Troy Lee? And from what I understand, you got a whole stable of celebrities that come through there at times.
Well, it's hilarious, the people that come in here. You know, Casey Kane, who sponsors our team, was in here a few weeks ago, and I didn't know who he was. It's like, who's this young kid? You know, you can see when Troy's like,
Andy Boyer just took his shirt off. Are you saying
when Troy's like catering, like hand walking somebody through? You're like, oh, who's this guy?
Right.
If Troy's walking him through, you know, showing him the showroom and the paint shop and the race shop, you know it's somebody.
Right.
So I'm like, this is this young kid, you know, like,
yeah.
Oh, he looks like he's fresh out of high school or, you know, sophomore in college maybe. It's Casey Kane, like, you know,
yeah.
Multi-millionaire race car driver.
Right.
Or like Slash was in here. That was another fun
No one. Way. Slash was in there.
Slash was in here from GNR about 2 weeks ago, yeah.
Did you talk to him?
Nah, I was kind of nervous. Shook his hand. He fired up a ciggy right in a race shop.
Always.
Oh, I should have asked him about Chinese Democracy, though, huh? You like it.
Oh, dude, it's so good. I don't know if it might be a touchy subject with him, but it's really
serious.
Well,
that's what I wanted to ask.
Really,
like, dude, I should have asked him. I keep kicking myself now. Like, what do you think? Like, did you ever think it would happen? Like,
yeah. Honestly, it's really good. And he had nothing to do with it, obviously, but
yeah.
Axel's back.
The guys at RacerX laugh at you for saying that.
Do they really?
They just think that that's terrible and you have no taste in music.
Oh, no, no, no. Oh, no. They haven't listened. That's why. But let me guess. Who laughed at me? Langers?
Well, no. You know, those guys are all like...
They're all artists.
College
they're,
music. Yeah,
they're,
you know, it's like...
They're all big artists. That's
yeah.
What, that's what they are. Like. So if the only way a band is any good is if you've never heard of them, then they're good. I know that type of person. You know what I mean?
I'm not making fun, dude. I bought Journey's Greatest Hits once you told me how good it was.
Oh, Journey's underrated. Weege,
I'm not going to tell you. I rock out. It's in my CD player right now.
Oh, yeah. No. Journey's very... I mean, they got some really sappy songs. Like, let's not kid ourselves. Like, I fast forward through, like, you know, When the Lights and stuff and all that. But but their rockers are good. And and actually, one guy that does share my musical taste is Wygan. He likes...
Oh, yeah?
He likes GNR and Jovi and Journey and, you know. But anyway, getting off topic here.
Yeah.
Give me something that bugs you right now in pro motocross. What bugs you the most?
What bugs me?
You know, just something that really, like, you're just shake your head at, and it's the state of the sport. I mean, I got a few, but you're the guest here, so.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of little things. There's nothing that's really driving me nuts. There's just a million little things that just kind of rub me the wrong way.
Okay, all right, like little things.
Well, I'm torn. Like, let's just start with the Monster Girl outfits. Because on the one hand, man, you know,
yeah.
The double takes and stuff. But then on the other hand, I'm like, man, it's too much. Like, it's ridiculous. You know?
My wife...
I keep asking Chris where the other half of his girlfriend's skirt is. Because her buns are, like, just hanging out the bottom.
Yeah.
Like, dude.
It really bugs my wife. And my wife is not... she's not a prude at all or anything like that. But the crotch cam for her is a little much. She's like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, there's kids in here, and they don't need to see that. They don't need to see the junk.
Yeah.
So
I concur. That's one thing. Some of the other stuff, just like,
Is it the money the guys are making?
The political crap. Okay. Like, I never want to begrudge anybody money.
Uh-huh.
Because these guys, you know, I mean, I did it. It's gnarly. It's a lot of work. It's dangerous.
Right.
So, or they should get paid. But, you know, Peyton was telling me that his idea of the way things should be is there should be a salary cap for both classes. You know, maybe in the 450 class, it's $200,000. And in the life class, it's $100,000 or $80,000 even.
Right.
And you take all that extra money that would be spent on salaries, and you put it into a purse, you know, and you know you have these massive purses, like, you know, $250,000
right.
per race. You know, you just think of all that money you could put into a purse, then you could actually advertise it. You know, instead of saying James Stewart won $5,000 for winning the race last weekend, you know, he won $500,000. You know, that's something that you could boast about, like golf tournaments do and tennis tournaments and things like that. So I don't know. It would be great for these guys to have to earn it, you know, earn that big money.
Yeah. Do you find
some of them will learn, some of them won't. You know, the kids that get a bunch of money too fast. Like, it looks like Grant, Josh Grant, kind of, like, I was bummed out with him for a while because he just, as far as before opening ceremonies at Anaheim when he rolled into that Lamborghini, I'm like, dude, are you kidding me?
Right.
Like, who pulls into the pits in a Lamborghini? I mean, look at me.
Yeah.
Dude, come on.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Stupid. But he's obviously, you know, changed things around back there. He's doing the work, and he's riding awesome. So good for him.
So much for that theory. But
well, but there's kids, you know, for every Josh Grant, there's a couple dozen Josh Hansons.
Even before Grant hit it big, there's a lot of people that said he got too much money too soon.
He was making crazy money, you know.
Yes,
as a lights guy, unless you're winning championships, you should not be making seven figures. And he was, so.
No, exactly. Do you find, too, that I think right now, it doesn't bug me that much, but I find right now that there's five guys making a shitload of money, and there's 100 guys making no money. The middle class has disappeared. Like, I know what Ferry makes, and it's not that much. You know what I mean? Because that he can't win.
Obama. You're going to spread the wealth around, just, like, make everybody the same? Socialist, socialist motocrosser?
Yes, I can.
I just say make them race for it, you know?
Well,
if the top guys want to be rich, fine, but make them earn it.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that there's good riders. Chris Bloss should be making money. Something. Okay? I'm trying to think of another guy off the top of my head. Like a Paul Carpenter, Bobby Cannavale. Do you think they're making, like, really anything close to what they should? No.
No.
You know, I'm not
but
saying.
But that's what I'm saying. If you had massive purses a tenth, you're getting $10,000 or $20,000.
Right.
Then there you go.
Okay, so I guess I'm agreeing with you. It just bugs me that there's this top half of guys that are making, you know, crazy stupid money because they can maybe win. And then there's the guys that are just making nothing, and they're very good riders. Heath Voss is a very good rider, you know, making probably, just scraping by or whatever, so.
Yeah.
What about Davey Millsaps? What's up with Davey Millsaps?
I don't know. I mean, I know he's not real happy with the bike setup. But I don't know. Personally, from an outsider looking in,
You're being so politically correct right now.
I know. Well, I kind of have to tiptoe a little bit, but it's like. You can just see that he doesn't care anymore. It's like it's become a job to him. He doesn't appreciate it. He doesn't enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So, I just tell him to quit. Go do something else for a while. You know.
Here's Chris Bloss's construction job.
Yeah, go hang freaking fire pipes up in these warehouses.
Fire pipes? What's a fire pipe?
Well, you know, like the water pipes for the fire sprinkler systems. And stuff.
Yeah, I don't think they're called fire pipes.
Yeah, whatever the hell they are, I don't know what they're called. Firefight.
Turn
that
on
the stupid.
We got a fire. Turn on the fire pipes. Come on.
Whatever.
Hey,
there's an example of a kid who, like, everything's been handed to him on a silver platter his whole life. You know, money's been flying at him faster than he knows what to do with it. And I don't know. He'll continue to have a factory ride because he's got the potential to do well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once in a while he'll pull something out of his butt and, you know, throw a great result in. But what's he been so far? Has he even been in the top 10?
I don't think so. No, I think he got a 9th and a 13th or something.
So then, yes, he's been in the top 10.
Oh, I thought you meant points. yeah.
Anyway, that's nothing, you know, for what he's being paid and the amount of talent that he has, it's, you know.
What, does James Stewart still not like you? What's going on with that?
No, I don't. He probably just doesn't care about me.
You did piss him off, though, huh, with the Roncada thing?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's so long ago. Like, I barely even remembered why, but yeah, that's why.
Anybody else that you really pissed off? Like, because I'm kind of dealing with that right now.
I pissed a lot of people off. Reed. I'm not sure that Reed likes me. Just because, you know, I just kind of called it how I saw it and for the last few years.
Was it about the Hoochie comment or before that even?
No, I mean, just about, you know, he just kind of had a crappy attitude the last couple years.
Uh-huh.
I think he's definitely turned things around a lot for this year, but
right.
I just kind of call it the way I saw it, and he didn't really like it, and I don't know, whatever. Maybe he doesn't care. Maybe he doesn't even know, but anyway.
Has anybody actually ever, like, confronted you and said, like, much like Jason Lawrence did to myself? Like, have you ever had those conversations with guys?
No.
No?
No.
All right, what's been the one article that you wrote all these years that maybe got the most reaction out of somebody or some company, or you know what I mean? Like, is there been one thing where you crossed the line and you were like, oh, oops?
There was two stories that have been headaches, not really for me, but for the company. RacerX had to kind of absorb the blow. One was a pizza place in New Philadelphia called Rosie's. I was staying with Brock in Ohio, and he had this favorite little pizza joint that he liked to go to. This place called Rosie's.
I've been there.
I think you might have been there that night.
I was there.
Ivan was there. You remember?
It's like a real small place. Massively small.
It was an old house.
Yeah, that's it. Yep. Yeah.
And Rosie's. We walk in, and I see the chick in like tossing up the salad in there, right, with her bare hands. and when she finally gets to us, you remember her little daughter's running around getting us drinks, blowing her nose, and throwing the napkin on our table?
Yeah, no, I remember.
When she finally comes up to get our order, she rolls down her nylons and starts rubbing her feet. She's walking around barefoot. She has these big old nasty feet.
I don't remember that. I really don't, but.
Dude, she's rubbing her feet going, what y'all want? What y'all want in your pizza?
Yeah.
And I almost threw up. I couldn't believe it. Like,
yeah. I remember
I'm just thinking, this chick's rubbing her feet, and she's about to go make my pizza. You know, I didn't see an A on the window. I mean, I'm pretty sure she wasn't going to wash up with soap before she started throwing pepperoni.
The Better Business Bureau had not visited.
No, so I just told the story as it was, and she freaked out, you know. Like,
did she read Racer X? I guess so, huh?
I don't know. I don't know that she reads Racer X. Someone probably brought it to her attention and whatever, but.
Dude, the pizza.
Threatened to sue.
I remember the pizza was nasty.
It was terrible.
It was horrible.
Yeah. And then the other one was the tornado story.
Oh, classic.
Which was funny, you know, and fun and whatever, but the people that actually made that bike, they didn't like it so much.
That might be your best story ever.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Too bad we couldn't come up with one of those every month, but. What do you do?
So those two things have brought you the most problems.
Yeah, it wasn't you, but Racer X for sure. Because that company, again, there was, you know, letters from attorneys and that kind of stuff sent over. And
when you sit down to write electronic ping every month, how do you come up with stuff?
First thing I do is just get completely naked.
Uh huh. Okay.
And I rub some Vaseline in my hair.
Okay. Sorry.
I was going to try to stick with something and see if he'd try it, but no. Yeah. Some of the stuff just comes to me. Like, you know, this next month I'm going to write about Dostal getting hurt, that whole thing. It's probably going to be a little more serious than normal, but it was gnarly, you know?
You went on some serious columns for a long time, and I remember telling you I didn't like them. I, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, can't be all clowns and, you know.
Can't be all sugar candy.
Sugar and daisies every time.
Right.
Sometimes there's real stuff, you know, like this. My, you know, Dostal should be paralyzed, man. There's no reason he shouldn't be. The injury he had and the way he crashed,
It was that close, huh?
It was dirty. Yeah, I mean, so.
Okay.
For him to be completely fine, it's just a trip. But it made me really think about a lot of stuff, like where you ride, what time of day you ride, who you're riding with. I think a lot of guys don't think about that stuff, you know?
No, I don't think they do. I remember just putting my cell phone in my boot a few times and heading on out, you know?
Yeah.
Looking back on your career, I mean, obviously you write about and you joke about how the second place in the championship that one year, but do you have, besides that obvious thing, do you have a regret about your career? Do you think it could have been better?
You know what?
I mean, you were a really good rider. Don't get me wrong. You were a really good rider and somebody every year that... See, the worst thing is that you were one of those guys that every year people were like, you know, Payne could win a title this year, and you never did. And so it's like you almost wish you were a contender every year. And maybe if you would have worked a little harder at it, maybe you would have had a career like... You know, I don't know, like somebody else. Do you regret that? Do you think about that? Like, I don't think you made the most of your talent, I guess, is what I'm going to just say right now.
Here's the thing, like...
Like, maybe you're Davey Millsaps of like, the mid-90s.
But see, it's totally different, and let me tell you why.
Okay.
Because, for instance, and, you know, at least this is my justification of it all, right? Because right. I know definitely in 1995, my first year with Mitch, I did not... take advantage of the opportunity I was given that year. I still won a race that year, but I just, as far as my riding, training, preparation, and focus, I was screwing around with, I had this one girl who I won't name, and it just was stupid. And I wasted a lot of time and effort and energy and money. And, you know, but after that, 96, I got serious. I mean, I worked my butt off. I came into that year ready to win. I won Bercy. I was second in the points behind Wyndham, and that's when I broke my femur that year, so that obviously right. kind of wrecked that year for me. But and what happened with me, you know, when we started back then, and it wasn't even, it's not like it was that long ago, but
right.
like,
yeah.
the salaries back then were so small. I mean, it was I got paid $25,000 when I rode for Mitch. Yeah. So did Ricky. I mean, that's just like what it was back then.
And if you think about it, that's 13 years ago. And what they're getting now is just, it's not
crazy.
Even, yeah,
it's crazy what it's gone to, but you know, the point is, like, that barely covered my cost of living, right? So I it's not like I could be frivolously spending on things, where now guys are spending 60, 80 grand a year on a trainer. That wasn't an option for me.
Yeah.
So I had to do the best I could to piece together, okay, how do I get ready, you know, and
some
take a little
program,
bit from this
yeah.
guy. And I was hanging out with Rhino, so, you know, he had some pretty cuckoo theories back then. I'm
you think he still
taking
does.
Some of those, and, you know, just like... what I was hodgepodging together
uh-huh.
was stupid looking back on it. Like, you know, and honestly, the most fit I'd ever been was in 2000, that year that I almost won the championship again, led the whole series. So I just basically copied what we did on race day, you know, and I would do motos with Jerry Dostal and a couple other guys, and we would just simulate motos all the time. I just rode a lot. And we did a little gym routine that was just stupid, and we did some bicycle riding, which was
stupid.
You know, there was no specific point to it. We just kind of went out and rode, you know.
Right.
Or now, you know, it's very specific. You're doing recovery rides for, you know, 60 minutes or 90 minutes, or you're doing interval training at the gym, or, you know, there's very specific.
You guys probably didn't even have clips on your pedals.
No, I don't think we did. I think we were running flats. I mean, we were stupid. So I couldn't go spend that money on a trainer. And even, I don't even know that there was any back then. Jeff Spencer helped me a little bit.
Right.
He was like the best guy, you know. He helped Wardy and maybe Johnny Owen, some of those guys. But like, he wasn't a hands-on guy at the races. I'd go to his gym, he'd show me kind of a workout and write me down a little program of what I should do at the gym, and that was it. So yeah, I mean, I looking back, I wish I knew then what I know now. You know, I don't think you find anyone who would say any different. You know, even Ricky
yeah.
say, well, man, you know, that one year, if I'd have known, you know, if I would have done this different.
Ricky kind of brought in the training for everybody, the hardcore training, huh? I mean, Wardy and those
yeah.
guys did it in the mid-80s, don't get, you know, also, but we
those guys train, but even Johnny O will tell you, he trained, he was dumb about it, you know, he way overtrained. He wasn't methodical and specific about it. Guys now, it's very, very specific where, you know, you're training, you know, to peak at a certain time, and, it's just gotten very, very specific because there's more money in it. You know, guys can afford to find good trainers and pay them. And
so the answer is really no regrets. You just did what you did. I mean, you did what you did. Tried your best.
I never got paid a ton of money. The most salary I ever got was $75,000. It was the most I ever made from a team. That was right. KTM. Man, so I never made from a factory six figures.
Between you and Sellers, they were just throwing the money around that year.
Well, yeah.
I think Kelly Smith got 60 or 70. See?
Yeah, well, they had to pay you a little bit back then to get you.
Brock made ridiculous money.
Yeah.
Okay, so... And then
I don't know. To answer your question, like, yeah, of course there's things I wish I could go back and change, but...
For a good 6-7 years, it was... Hey, Ping could win this thing. You know what I mean? And I think that's an honor to just be included in the conversation for so many years as a guy that could win it. You know?
Yeah. I think from 96 till...
You know, 02, 03.
Till 03. Yeah, 03 I was a joke, but...
What about when you made the comeback with Plano for the outdoors? You were tired... Yeah. And then then everybody was like, Ping is coming back, but he's coming back for the outdoors?
Well, no. I rode Supercross that year. That was the year my bike broke in half.
Oh, was it?
I won Anaheim.
Oh, okay.
Second in the points again to Stewart. That was the last straw where, like, I was second to Stewart and just won Anaheim. I was on a roll. I was really riding well that season. I was fit, and then my bike broke in half, and
that was the
tough to have a lot of confidence in your bike when you're... Piston skirt cracks off on the face of a triple and sends you lawn darting.
Yeah, no, and luckily you got away from that pretty good considering.
And if Stewie had gone on and just like crushed it and won the title, I'd have been like, well, whatever, I probably wasn't going to win anyway then. But like, do you remember when he just spiraled down the drain at Dallas and Preston Forrest Gumped his way into a title?
Forrest Gumped?
You know, just like... Whatever.
Oh, just from being there. Like Forrest Gump was
just like Lottie. Yeah. Right. Lottie Dye won one round and just kind of like was consistent.
What about the lights class and moving up? What's your feelings on that? What should be the rule on that?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
I'll tell you, I would have loved to have moved up after, you know, the first three, or I think, you know, you get 3 or 4 years and then like you've gotten all the experience you need. You can move up, you know, like you're ready to move up, but you've got to have a decent ride. You know, you can move up and, you know, back, at least now there's a few teams, like, you know, whether you're riding for J-Law or like, even Moto Triple X here these last few years, they've had great bikes, you know, since the 450 came out. There's a few teams you can get on the 450 and have a decent bike. But back in my day, it was like Honda of Troy had, you know, maybe one or two spots, and they were generally... you know, full guys, and Moto Triple X, which was time not real good, and I certainly didn't fit in with their program. Just I was a few tattoos too short, and
but you raced the 250 Supercross class a couple times, didn't you?
Yeah.
I don't think I remember that.
Yeah, I qualified at Indy for the first one I tried, and qualified for Daytona, and I actually missed one in Phoenix once, and then I did, after I retired at 04, I went and did one and qualified for Atlanta.
Oh, you did?
On a stock Honda 250, remember? I did Atlanta Supercross, and I did the GNCC in Palatka, Florida, and I went to Daytona.
That's right. Yes, I do remember that. What's been the coolest place you've visited for racing? I mean, you've been all over the world, literally.
I've been racing to some awesome places. I've, like, definitely milked that for all it's worth. I went one year... JT used to have a distributor in Tahiti when I rode for JT. This was 1994.
Mm-hmm.
And this distributor, I can't imagine they sold a ton of gear, but they would bring down riders every year. And there was no money. It was just you got a paid vacation to come down if you came and did this big annual race that they had. And, like, Glover had been down and RJ and, you know, tons of guys who had ridden for JT in the past. So I ended up going down with a buddy of mine from Phoenix. You know Alex McKellier owns Red Baron?
Yeah, he was on that PJ1 team that I was
That's right. Well, he wore JT in 94, too, so we both went down there. And I still had a broken wrist. I was wearing a brace on it. I shouldn't even have been riding, but I'm just like, Tahiti, yeah, I'm going. So we went down, and we sucked. pretty bad, and like one of the local guys beat us. So they were talking in French. You know, it's a French Polynesian chain of islands, and so they're talking in French at this after this meeting after the race. You know, with everybody, and my buddy was telling the buddy that we stayed with down there. Was telling us afterwards that they were talking crap on us, like, you know, I know we've had some great riders come down, and Glover, these guys did not really live up to, like, you know. But anyway, that was, we just had a blast down there. Also, Australia was fun. New Zealand was amazing. I had a blast in Puerto Rico. Alaska.
Yeah, Alaska. That was a cool story.
Yeah, Fairbanks. So.
And I guess the Supercross in Hawaii is probably not up on the list.
Oh, yeah, that's that was like the worst and the best, though, you know.
Right, right. That's a good story. If any fans are out there listening, get Ping to tell you the unedited version of that story. Like you told me that one time.
Yeah, I don't know if you'll ever see that again. Like the cover photo that we shot, we're all standing there in Waikiki Beach. Everybody's holding surfboards behind them, you know, like the old school Hawaiian photos had, and there's the Duke Kahunamoku or whatever his name is statue back there, and there was a lot of good guys there, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure.
That was fun.
Those days of all those guys going up to—I mean, not Hawaii, but everybody going to Europe. You know, Stanton told me he made more money in 2 months in Europe than he did in his whole season of Honda. Those days are over. Those guys don't go over anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Europe's turning out better riders than they used to for Supercross, and. You know, for a while, they sucked so bad at Supercross that they had to bring over Americans to have a show. Yeah, and it's like now, yeah, they don't need to. They can just bring riders from around the EU, and
yeah,
it's a decent show, one or two Americans, and they don't have to pay them as much.
Do you ever think about going back to Bercy and trying to defend your title?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay, all right.
I don't at all. If I never go back to France, that's just fine with me.
Oh, hey, that got you in trouble, too, the KTM thing.
That got me fired.
You think?
No, it did. Kurt told me that he got orders from Peer,
really?
Mr. Peer. Yeah, after the season, let me go.
Wow. I didn't know that he got you fired. I know you got in trouble for it.
Yeah.
but Nickel at least probably laughed.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
I don't know. He made it sound like it wasn't him at all. Because, you know, us, you know, British guys, we have a sense of humor, but those Krauts, they don't really laugh about that kind of stuff. That's what he told me.
And you're like, yeah, whatever. I'll take that call back if I get another ride.
Yeah.
Was it?
I don't know what they were mad about. I complimented the company, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Anything else really bug you about Supercross now that we've been talking about it? I kind of want to get on.
You know what? You know what bothers me a lot? Like, it's not just Supercross. It's super, like, motorcycles in general. X Games is, like, the worst for it. And we need to come up with a name for them, but, like, the fast huggers. Like, when a guy does something or wins something, there's these certain guys, there's probably like 5 to 10 of them, they're the first ones on them, giving them a hug to make sure they get on camera, just like nut swinging.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
Do you know who I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely.
Because I know you could drop about 4 names right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably not a good idea, but...
No.
It's like, the guy just, you know, he just won a gold medal. Get off, let him have, you know...
Yeah.
Back off, let him enjoy it for a second.
Or how about your guy just did one run out of two and the results haven't been announced yet and maybe you shouldn't be hugging him. You know what I mean? It's that bad. Like, it's not even when they win the medal, it's just like when they pull up and after they finish the trick, it's like the guy won the lottery. You know? You're like, come on, the thing's not even over yet.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. It kind of bugs me, too. I got you. I got you.
That bugs me. There's a ton of stuff, man, but I don't know.
What about the fact that, like, none of these top riders can ever walk around by themselves?
Yeah, well.
I mean.
It's pretty bad, man. It's an insecure bunch at the end of the day. A lot of them. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And they completely base their self-image and, like, their identity on motorcycle racing. And I'll tell you what. When the time comes when you're not a racer anymore, you better be able to do something else or find something else you love, because it's hard when you're just not a racer anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I was actually talking to Chad Pedersen yesterday.
Swap.
And I'm sorry, Brock Sellards. And he said he had a riding school this summer in Ohio. And it was like, you know, mostly local kids. He was getting younger kids to come in and do it. And he brought Ezra up for it.
Uh-huh.
thinking that that would draw in a bunch of extra guys.
Yeah.
Well, as it's coming closer and he's getting everybody signed up and stuff, no one had any idea. They're like, hey, Brock, who's this guy you have out here with us? No one knew who Ezra Lusk was. And Ezra's like, are you kidding me? And they're like, well, we kind of wanted to work with you. I mean, I know your friend, you know, you say he's good, but like... He's
got a funny name and...
And Brock's going, you guys don't get it. Like, this guy was way better than you. You don't even understand. Like,
yeah, yeah. I know.
And no, so my point is, here today, gone today. Like, as soon as you're quit racing, nobody knows who you are.
Yeah.
I mean, how awesome was Yogi for how many years?
Oh, I know.
And people don't even know who he is anymore.
I know. Actually, Ferry and I have had the exact same conversation because he's like, these guys just quit. Like, Larry Ward, Ezra, Damon Huffman, they quit. And, like, nobody talks about them. Nobody cares.
Ferry will be another one.
Yeah, he knows that.
He's like, you know, he didn't win, like, a million titles. He's not, he's kind of quiet, low-key guy. When he quits, poof.
Oh, yeah.
No. He's gone.
He knows that. And we've had this conversation because Ezra Lusk is, to me, one of the greats of the sport.
Totally.
I mean, badass guy in his day. And, nobody, Larry Ward. I mean, Larry's a different deal, but. Larry just quit, and nobody cared. You know what I mean? I don't know. It just seems like these guys should have more of a send-off than what they do, and more people should care. But
it's sad. I mean, it's sad that in baseball or football, there's so many guys that are, you know, kind of Hall of Fame type of guys.
Yeah.
And in motocross, you know, it's like a real small number of people that are remembered.
Yeah, exactly.
Hannah, R.J. Wardy.
Exactly.
You know, like, it's a really small number of people.
And
McGrath, Ricky, you know, obviously, but...
Timmy. No, just kidding. But, no, I agree. And these guys should be recognized more for what they've done. I mean, Ezra Lusk was the only guy to beat Jeremy McGrath for many years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you ask McGrath, he's like, yeah, I was scared of Yogi. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He could beat me on a given day. And Larry Ward won races, like, 20 years apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's worth something. I'll tell you what really bugs me. It's not my show. It's you're the guest, but I'm going to say what really bugs me. And I was having this conversation this weekend with somebody. There's too many guys in our sport that are just there now because it's the good times. And I don't mean like riders. I mean industry people, sponsors people. They're not. It really bugs me when a guy's not like core. Do you know what I mean? Like you're just like, dude, come on. You know what I mean? Can you name anybody that won a race before 2003? Can you name who Ezra Lusk is? There's a ton of guys in our sport that you're like, come on. You know what I mean? That bugs me. That really bugs me. There's a line that Bevo had about nobody should be in charge of the sport unless they've slept in a van overnight at the races, and it's actually not that bad of an idea.
Yeah, you're probably right.
All right, so I'm going to get off my soapbox. That's what really kind of bugs me.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the podcast with Steve Mathis.
Exactly. Sorry, I got off on a rant there, but I knew you'd appreciate that. You know, just guys that are just there, you know, and you're like, come on.
Those are the same ones running to hug the guys when they come off their track to get the shot.
They are. Yeah, they are.
Well,
was there one racer? You got to go?
No.
Okay. Was there one racer? I ask a lot of people this question, and I always find it interesting. Was there a racer that you lined up against every week that never did really anything in racing but could have had the talent to but never ever applied themselves?
Brandis.
Brandis? Yeah. Brandis was fast, huh?
That kid could absolutely rip, but just he also could crack open beers.
He could rip the beers from the six-pack.
That was his downfall.
I remember him leading Bud's Creek when he was on Team Stiffy for a good half the race.
Team Stiffy.
Yes, Team Stiffy.
You should not be in this sport if you can't remember Team Stiffy.
Exactly. There we go. There's a question when you come into the sport. I remember Team Stiffy, and actually Gothic J made the... Gothic J... who's now like a respected mechanic.
At Factory Honda,
working on the best bikes, the most exotic bikes in the pits. I don't know about best bikes, but Gothic J switched from Moto Triple X to Stiffy because they were paying better. It's like, what were they, 50, 50 bucks?
Baggy pants.
Yeah. Were they $50 better, Jay? I mean, back then you didn't make any money anyway.
You know who I saw at the Anaheim press conference? It was like full-on blast from the past. Who's the guy that owns LBZ?
Mike Russell.
What I'm talking about?
Mike Russell.
He still had like all these big jewelry necklaces on and like a tight, shiny shirt and like his hair all slicked back with a goatee all shiny black. He always looked like the devil to me. I thought if anyone was turned out to be the Antichrist, it might have been Mike Russell.
The devil in really ugly clothes.
Yeah, in shiny baggy freestyle motocross gear.
Velvet crushed pants.
Yeah. I was waiting for him to pop a shoe off and have like a little hooved foot.
Yeah. What was he doing there, I wonder?
I have no idea. He stopped me. Hey, Ping, what's up, bro? Fire shot out of his mouth.
You're like, hey, LBZ guy.
LBZ. And he had a couple of girls with him, of course. Like,
right, he always had
straight
chicks.
Straight out
yes.
of a strip club.
Yes, he always pulled up the races in a limo with chicks in the back all the time.
And a shiny shirt. With, like, crushed velvet pants.
You know who loved that stuff, though? Who rocked that clothes every weekend? Was Fournette.
Who?
Fournette. Jason Fournette rocked those LBZ clothes every weekend.
Again, no Canadian references in this.
Sorry, but you do remember Jason Fournette.
I do.
Yeah.
Dude, everybody, you know, my brother-in-law is Phil Lawrence now, right? You know that?
Yes.
Well, wasn't not too long ago, he's got this box.
Factory Phil.
This box of loose pictures in his house,
mm-hmm.
and it's just all old school photos that he never, you know, put in an album or anything. But
right.
he has from back in those days, like the you know, LBZ days, Krusty Demons of
right.
Dirt,
Great Western.
And there's
Bank.
These photos of him and Dave Castillo and Fro. And they all have, they're wearing, like, black eyeliner and, like, the shiny shirts with, you know, the big necklaces.
Been up for days.
So fun. Yeah, been up for days on who knows what.
Yeah.
Anyway, funny stuff.
Yeah, you know, Factory Phil was one of those guys, like, when I first got...
Hey, Factory Phil, there's a guy.
What?
There's a dude who could have been national champion, no problem.
Really?
I saw that guy at Gainesville past Bale, Stanton... Pass him on a 250.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In a race or when they were idling in practice?
No. Factory Phil was a bad dude.
Wow.
1992 or 3, I can't remember. Maybe it was 93.
On probably a bike that, probably
Factory
wasn't.
Suzuki, he was bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Factory Phil was one of those guys, and it's like J-Bone to me, in the fact that when I started out as a mechanic, and was making no money and sleeping in the truck and sleeping in hotel lobbies and you know, basically was very low on the totem pole. Factory Phil was riding for Tecate, Mexico, near the end of his deal, and treated me like the coolest, like his buddy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know how you can tell people, like, you know, people talk to me more when I was at Factory Yamaha than I did when I was Birdwell's mechanic. That's just the nature of our sport. But Factory Phil and J-Bone were two guys that were always the nicest, coolest guys out there to me, even when I was nobody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that. I'll be like, wow, Phil Lawrence is a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Like, he just talks to me like I'm a human being.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
McGrath was another guy. I remember hanging out with him at Troy, Ohio, and he was making fun of James Daub, actually.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this guy's really normal and cool. And you didn't always get that from everybody.
Yeah.
You know? Like you treating me at FMF Honda the way you did.
You know what? I apologize for that. Do you remember when I brought that bike back swamped and flooded with a Pro Circuit exhaust system on it and got in trouble?
No.
Do you remember 98 was El Nino season?
Yeah, because
we went riding one day and it rained. And I was with Chad Pedersen and a couple other guys, and there was this like flowing river going through this riding area we had. And we were like... You know, it's kind of started off small, and it got wider and wider, like, as you went down.
Mm-hmm.
So we started off just kind of wheeling across, and pretty soon we're, like, daring each other to go deeper and deeper until eventually we were going, like, submarining the bikes. Like, you just go, underwater, and then come out the other side. Well, eventually we all flooded our bikes, like, drowned them, and we had to push them back, like, 2 miles to the house. And so I brought this bike back to Dean Gibson, who was my mechanic there.
Yep.
And he's tearing it down. He pulls the jug off, and then just water comes pouring out of the bottom end of it. And Donnie Emler was in the shop when he did that. And to make it worse, I had put a Pro Circuit silencer on because we were having problems.
Oh, those silencers didn't work so very good. No, they didn't.
So, anyway, Donnie was like, what the hell? He was so mad. Why is this bike, why is there water coming out of it, and why is there pro circuit exhaust on it?
Now, what would happen in 2009 if Chris Blos brings his bike to the shop with an FMF system on it full of water? What does Ping the manager do?
Oh, boy. Yeah, yeah, I don't know.
I've seen that from riders, the total lack of care about their motorcycles. And they'll just be like, ah, I got a mechanic. I got a mechanic. I don't care. Well, guess what? I'm that guy that gets pooped on.
Yeah. So it was pretty bad. That was not my crowning moment as a rider.
And actually, how slow were those bikes?
Unbelievable.
Not a good bike. I mean, partly due to that aluminum frame, I think. You know, Honda lost their way.
Still another insignificant statistic. I got that team their first podium, indoors and out.
Did you?
Yep.
I know outdoors you did, for sure.
Houston Supercross was the second round. I got a second on that slow pile of crap.
Well, now that you're calling it that way.
And then at Glen Helen, remember that with the red pipes and all that stuff?
Yeah. No, I know. Glen Helen, you
got
a
second in the first moto on that thing.
Yes. Yes.
Calamity.
You were on it.
Or what, Dowdy or Wyndham. I don't remember.
What happened to Ricky?
I don't remember.
You just
98. Maybe it was Ricky.
Probably.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't remember. I just beat him.
I just know I got second. I was like, I can't believe I just got second on this bike.
Yeah.
It handled great. I just can't tell him how great it handled, but I think it was just because it was so slow.
Yeah, that's probably why slow bikes
couldn't really swap or get away from you when it was just like chugging along.
All right. Well, hey, thanks. I've kept you a long time, longer than I thought you'd stay on the phone with me.
Mathis.
Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Anything for you, man.
Thank you. Thanks.
My wife just left me a text message that said, call me, you son of a bitch.
That is true love.
It is.
Yeah, that is.
Well, she's called me like 8 times since we've been on the phone.
Oh, okay.
Called her back, so.
Tell her it's media. Media relations. You know?
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. No, there's no way that, you know, you this is important stuff.
Yeah.
You can actually write this time off to Troy.
Yeah, trust me, I'm going to.
Thanks for doing this.
No problem, Steve-O. See you this weekend.
Yeah, see you at Anaheim, too.
Sounds good, dude.
All right, thanks.
Later.
Bye. All right, thanks for listening. That was it. David Pingree. I really like that one. Ping's a good guy, and I knew we'd get along really good. So I should try to have him on more often. Racer X fame, and now team manager of the Troy Lee Designs Honda. And if you ask me again, front runner for team manager of the year. I think it was a good one, and I want to thank all you guys for listening to it. You know, next week I'll bring you another great, fantastic guest. I just have no clue who that is. So send in your suggestions, and thanks for listening to the Racer X podcast show.